Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
Matt, how you doing?
Doing good, Ben.
Well, it's time to talk about Black Panther, which is my most anticipated movie of 2018. And now that I've seen it, I guess I'm done. I'm done for the year. I don't have to watch any more movies, which is kind of a relief. This is it was anticipated for me. I think it was anticipated for a lot of people because it was a change of tone and change of style in a way for Marvel. Obviously, it's kind of the first mega major black superhero movie. Obviously, we've had Blade and others, but for me it was a big deal just because when I was a kid, I remember seeing Black Panther in a trading card and then in comic books and thinking that this is the coolest looking superhero I've ever seen, and then learning more about just kind of the nature of the character, that he's, you know, this like regent of a fictional country, and all this stuff is just so awesome. And then as this project started coming together, it started collecting talent like Ryan Coogler, who made Creed, which is one of my favorite movies of 2015, and of course Fruitvale Station, which is very good. And he just seems like a extremely smart and he's got everything a big populist director needs to have. You know, he's got a heart for people, but also a heart for big visuals and moments. And then, of course, Michael B. Jordan came on board. So it just kept getting better and better, it looked like. And then finally we had the release this last weekend. Where were you at on this movie before it came out?
I was definitely very excited for all the reasons you just mentioned, but also because in this, you know, adult onset comic book nerddom that I've gone through, Black Panther happened to be the first big run of comics that I ever read. It just got recommended to me, and somebody said this is a good jumping on point and just give it a shot. And I loved it. And it was, you know, I read the Christopher Priest run, which I know Ryan Coogler has mentioned as being a big influence on this movie. But I feel like from that point on, and I haven't read a lot of the older Black Panther stuff before that, it's a character that I think is, while it is definitely a comic book story and everything good that you could hope for out of something like that, great, like, sci-fi ideas and, you know, just sort of intricately involved in its own world that it builds out with all these unique characters. But it also has developed a reputation as being something that tells a story about, you know, geopolitics and race and, you know, nationalism and things like that. Some really interesting concepts that are obviously very relevant in what's, you know, in the world around us right now too. And it isn't just telling stories about the black experience and, you know, black people, even though that's obviously a huge focal point of why this movie has become such a big deal. I think this movie came through in kind of every way that I had hoped it would when I found out they were making the movie, because it hits, even though it feels very different from the source material, I think they kind of took the most important things about Black Panther and what makes it a unique property, and they made it work on screen, in that we get incredible world building. I mean, to me, just to dive right in, I mean, I think the first 45 minutes probably of this movie, where we're kind of being introduced to everything. Every new scene brings something completely new in terms of introducing an idea to us or this culture or the world that they're living in. And every scene for that first stretch of the movie, I was just I kind of couldn't believe it. I'm not sure that I've had that experience from another Marvel movie, because a lot of these movies have been set in a very grounded, realistic feeling world, and they'll drop some things in us sometimes, you know, a shield base or, you know, Stark Tower, something like that. But for the most part, they're relatively similar to the real world, and that's kind of the point. But this is a movie that full on, I think it's probably the first hour of it, it feels more like a Thor movie than anything else, because it's taking you to this incredibly different world and different culture, and it just dives right into it. And it's incredible. I mean, the all of the sort of design elements of this movie, the you know, the sort of challenge scene and all the rules that go around that, it's all in there, and it's all awesome on its own, but it's also all setting up plot elements for later in the movie, so it's all totally necessary, too, to what's going on. So, I mean, I think what's crazy and probably what I didn't expect is that Ryan Coogler, who has no experience in this at all, just full-on dove in and created a sci-fi fantasy movie that basically does all the things a great sci-fi fantasy movie has to do, and he does them pretty perfectly.
Yeah, I guess I forgot to mention that we are going to probably go into some plot specifics as spoilers for anybody that hasn't seen the movie. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, for a long time, I was always like, well, this is kind of like a hard character to mess up, you know? Like, it's quite cinematic, you know? It's steeped in things that I feel like movie audiences are familiar with in terms of, you know, royalty and things like that, and kind of there's almost like the tradition of Tarzan movies in a way. You know, there's certain aspects of this mythology that I feel like are hard to mess up. It's not like Thor or Captain America, which I feel like, you know, could be, if done wrong, it could be really embarrassing. But that said, then I watched the movie, and yeah, like you said, there's like so much going on, and it's so complex that it's like, okay, yeah, there was a lot of room for error here that they could have fallen into, but yeah, it's really well crafted and well put together, and that's very impressive considering that this is like 5 of the day. It's like, okay, so it's like James Bond meets Batman meets Creed meets Lord of the Rings. You know, there's so much stuff. You know, you've got the Q scene with Cherie, but then you've also got like this massive Lord of the Rings battle scene at the end, and then you've got like the Dark Knight Rises basically with Killmonger kind of doing the Bane thing, but then you've got again like the royal politics, which is almost like, you know, something out of Shakespeare. So it is like so many different elements mixed, and then like the fight scenes, which are like a Rocky movie, like the challenge scenes, which are awesome. So yeah, and like, so what, it was funny because when I was in the movie, like the challenge scene, I was like, okay, this is like a really fun, like there's nothing else I'd rather do than like just spend some time in Wakanda and learn about like their traditions and, you know, some things. And this is that. You know, this is just a frivolous side plot that they're going to go down just so we can spend some time here. Nope, totally wrong. It's, like, entirely necessary for the plot. It sets up the obvious, you know, third act turn or the second act turn. So, yeah, it's really, really deftly put together. And on top of all of that, obviously, it's, like, plot-wise it's good and character-wise it's rich. They do the best thing a superhero movie can do, which is surround your superhero with an ensemble that is as interesting, if not more interesting, than your hero. You know, I mean, Nolan did it for the Batman movies, and that was kind of a breakthrough, considering the Burton movies didn't exactly have a great ensemble that surrounded Michael Keaton. But obviously the Marvel movies have done that. You know, you have all these side characters that are as memorable as Tony Stark or Steve Rogers. So yeah, he did that thing. But on top of all of those like script mechanics that he got really well, he also injected this film with a lot of meaning that is consistent to the theme of his work up to now. Something that I thought was interesting is that when he was writing his shorts and Fruitvale Station, getting ready for the Sundance Lab that ended up helping him produce that, he worked, his day job was, I think, at like a counselor at like an inner city youth center or something like that. Basically, the facility that Black Panther sets up at the end of this movie. That's what Ryan Coogler did. And if you look at Fruitvale and Creed and this, they are all very much concerned with what do we do with young people that feel like they're not wanted. And when they feel like they're not wanted, what is that? What is the fruit of that? You know, what is that yield to culture? And I think that's amazing. You know, I feel like this is a guy that he can shoot these big action scenes and he can make these fun and funny moments, but he can also inject this $200 million blockbuster with loads of cultural context and meaning. And you mentioned another totally different thing. So what do you do when you combine that with a sense of ethnic nationalism, you know, like, oh my God, like that's how Hitler happened. You know, it's an angry young man that was given power to make you know, an other into an enemy, and that's all of our great villains in the world. And he managed to kind of weave all that together, and he just understands something about society and culture and humanity that I think is very unique in this movie about a magic rock that lets a guy drink purple sauce that makes him, you know, super strong.
Damn it. These movies are so freaking good, Ben.
Yeah, I know. Like, we don't deserve it, Matt. We don't deserve it.
How do you, like, seriously, this could be one or the other, you know, like we could have a bunch of sort of dumb superhero movies that have these fun ideas in them, and we just kind of do the formula for 2 hours, and I'd still be pretty happy about it.
Yeah, we could have Batman Forever, you know, over and over again. And it's like, okay, I'm okay with that. Like, it's not bad.
But these, I think this one in particular, probably more than any other Marvel movie that's immediately jumping out to me. And they've had others that certainly have dealt with, I feel like, relevant themes and have something to say beyond just being a superhero movie. But I think what kind of blew me away about this movie in that part of it is, I guess I was sitting in the movie and probably, you know, around the transition from the second to third act, it's dawning on me that in some ways what Ryan Coogler has done with his screenplay here is created, is saying something to his audience about the United States government, which is currently run by basically white ethno-nationalists. And he's having the most African superheroes of all time standing in for those characters. And that is when you have an understanding of how storytelling and metaphor works, you know, where you do not need to signal to the audience what you're talking about because it's a universal theme and an idea. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to make your characters look like the people that you're talking about. And you know, it would be great if this movie, if all it tried to do was just speak to black audiences because they haven't felt spoken to by a lot of these other movies. And it was just addressing their feelings and giving them an experience that's unique to their feelings about the world. And it wasn't doing that. This is a movie that's clearly made for everyone, for a very broad audience, while still being really smart and really cool and entertaining, and doesn't hit you over the head with what it's trying to say. But it's obviously there if you look for it. I think there's also some perverse enjoyment that I get out of that exact thing that I talked about there. I think there's something that I really enjoy about telling a story that might be kind of about Donald Trump, and that story is told from a character named Black Panther. I definitely think everybody was having a good time with that. But that's what these stories have been about. I mean, in the late 90s, stuff that I talked about that I first read when I got into comics, he's telling stories about Bill Clinton and George W. Bush through the Black Panther. So this character has been a stand-in for talking about, you know, leadership at a high level. And
right, yeah, it's what do we do? What do you do if you have power? You know, how do you remain good and wield power? Which is also, you know, that is also the subtext of much of the Marvel movies. You know, it's the whole thing with Captain America. You know, is he was chosen not because he was the strongest or the best, but because not the strongest or the technically best, but he had a good heart. And how does he keep that, you know, throughout all these challenges? Yeah, I mean, there's a line in this movie where it's like, political coups happen during times of transition, like election years. It's like, oh, God.
When did you start writing?
I was having a really good time until I heard that. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's crazy. Like, I have to imagine that they did a little bit of a rewrite, you know, either that or they really saw things coming in 2016. But I mean, mostly I'm doing this for the Flanagan boys who hate Marvel movies, but I'll point out a few things that I feel like that could have had an extra polish. And one of the things, mm-hmm. is you mentioned kind of like hitting us over the head with the message. I could have actually used that in the form of the first post-credit sequence is his kind of coming out to the UN.
Right.
Which I think was actually a really good scene. And I feel like, but I don't think it would have been the right scene to cut to the closing credits on. I feel like the moment they cut to the closing credits on is perfect with the boy saying, who are you? And then it closes in on him. That's awesome. I would have just taken that UN scene and put it before that scene, so that we get an idea of, I just feel like that UN speech that he gives is so pointed to the message, I guess, of the movie. And, you know, I'm okay with that.
It definitely folds it into, I understand why you make it a post-credit, because the post-credit scenes, what the language of that has become, is I think those are now connective tissue to other movies. And so it's not necessarily required to tell the story that's in Black Panther. It does, I think, fit really well when you're reminding people and tying this movie to all these other 17 movies. And in some ways, I mean, I think he's very clearly mirroring the end of Iron Man.
Yep.
And you know, it's also this cool tease because we now look at it and see, well, you know, 3 months from now, it's all going to be different because all of these other Marvel movies, everything we just saw is now going to be part of the reality of this world that these other Marvel characters are in. And it's going to change everything, just like he thought it might at the end of the regular part of this movie, at the end of the actual movie pre-credits. There's this sort of promise that if we actually use the abundance we have and share it with other people, we could actually change the entire world. And to me, the UN scene is kind of like, okay, it's happening. Like when we come back to the MCU, everything's going to be different.
Yeah, when we come back in a few weeks. Jesus.
Dude.
Help us. How are we going to live through this?
Yeah.
Like, we don't deserve it, Matt. I'm saying again, we don't deserve it. They're too good to us.
Let me just say this, too, because I've actually, I mean, obviously a lot of people saw this movie, more even than a typical Marvel movie, I think, especially opening weekend. And I've talked to a couple of people who have not seen any other MCU movies and walked into Black Panther. And, you know, I was very curious how some of this stuff would play to that kind of audience. And, you know, so far every person I've said, I didn't feel lost at all. I didn't feel like I was missing anything, or there was something that needed connecting for me other than the final post-credit scene, which obviously wouldn't mean anything to you if you haven't seen a Captain America movie. But really outside of that, and it's the very end of it. And to me, it's basically a trailer for Infinity War.
Sure.
So I can't really knock it too much, I do think this movie is a great kind of entry point for somebody who, and I have lots of friends who tell me, because they know that I'm really into these movies, and they say, I would like to try them, but it seems really daunting to me because there's so many of them. And I try to tell them a lot, like, there's a lot of these movies that you could watch without ever having seen any of the other ones. And you'll
definitely
pick it up pretty quickly. And this, I think this one more so than probably any other.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only other nitpick, again, I'm doing this for the descendants of Marvel hater Steve Flanagan, who his children must please him and bring him tribute.
Children. Yeah.
They're kind of like Gamora and her sister. I forget her name. They want to do is please Thanos.
Nebula.
Graham
is definitely Nebula.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. So doing this for them. But the only other thing I'll kind of ding the movie on is some of the action scenes, especially the last scene, the fight between Killmonger and Black Panther, is pretty hard to follow at times because it's so digitally, like, whipping around and everything. And the
and
final
it's in the
moment,
dark.
And
yeah.
It's in the dark. And the final moment where he kills him, and I don't know what move he did. It's like some sort of reverse flip. That said, I love the fact that metaphorically it happens with these two, basically these two kids from other sides of the tracks, you know, and it's like actually like playing out that metaphor, you know, it's
nice.
Like, you know, this, they're basically mirror images of themselves, which is a constant thing, not just in the Nolan Batman movies, but also the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, going back to Iron Man, where he basically fights a version of himself, and Captain America has to fight Red Skull, which is a version of himself, another super soldier, or Winter Soldier. Hulk has to fight Abomination, which is like a disturbed version of himself. Like, all of these villains are mirror images of the heroes, because at the end of the day, the villains of these movies aren't the villains. The villains of these movies are the protagonists themselves, you know, and the ways that they could become those villains, you know, Ant-Man and Yellowjacket, same thing. You know, they're fighting themselves the same way that Batman is fighting a masked character in a masked outsider in The Dark Knight, or, you know, this well-trained child of the shadows in Dark Knight Rises. It's great heroic storytelling, you know, of these characters that are, they're wrestling with themselves as much as they are this external antagonist. And of course, our YouTube and Twitter honest trailer culture just wants to, I don't know what they want. I don't know if they want Jack Nicholson Joker every time for a villain, but I think that this whole refrain of Marvel movies have bad villains, it's a pretty lazy thing that they just, people
this
just
one
need
has
to
two good
engage
villains.
With the movie. Seriously, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Andy Serkis is great in this movie. But going back, some of the action was a little bit muddy. I've seen a few complaints about the action scene, the first kind of action scene, in when he's rescuing Lupita Nyong'o's character, but I thought that was pretty awesome, you know, the way that was just lit up by machine gun fire.
I think you need a good screen. I mean, if you saw it in IMAX, I think
I did.
You probably wouldn't have any complaints. I think if you saw it in kind of a crappy projector, you might have had a harder time.
Yeah, I saw it in IMAX, and the South Korea action scene is pretty awesome. It's really that final fight between them at the train. It's just a little hard to follow, even with my best possible viewing experience. But all of those things, it's like, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard to ding the movie on something like that when it does everything else so well. You know, when you're telling a story that addresses the core problems with humanity, it's like, okay, like a little fuzzy action is probably number five on my priority list, if you're giving me great action otherwise. So, but yeah, I'm excited about this movie. I'd love to see it again, and I'm definitely excited for Infinity War. So, yeah, I guess Marvel is really good. That's what we're trying to say.
We did it again. Now, I want to throw a couple more things worth mentioning in there, though, just quickly. You mentioned the Korea scene. I mean, to me, that's when I was most wrapped up and just jaw dropped in this movie. And I mean, I got kind of into that scene, really before the action even kicks off, just as you're walking into the casino with the three leads, basically, it just kind of hit me in that moment of like, this is the coolest shit I have seen in a long time.
So cool.
Like,
yeah.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an African king with a superhero suit on, with his martial arts trained general, female general, and his other like super spy buddy who's with him, and they're like going on a mission, and they run into the CIA in there. It's indescribably awesome, that moment, and then everything that plays out after it too. Is some of the most creative and interesting sci-fi action we have seen in a long time. The stuff with Shuri remotely driving the car is awesome.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, really, I wanted to bring that up. I really like the actress that plays Shuri a lot. Letitia Wright is so likable. And I think it's not a coincidence that she's the last person we see in the post-credits. I'm hopeful, and I think it's probably the case, that she's going to be in Infinity War and part of the kind of connective tissue of the Marvel movies going forward. She's a great character, I think, to see mix it up with other Marvel characters. I think they kind of clearly seem to be identifying her as one of those people that will be, you know, showing up in some of the other stuff. And I hope that's the case, because she's super likable and a really cool character. That's the first time I've ever seen that actress in anything. I just thought she was great. Definitely, now I'm blanking on the name of the tribe, but like the ostracized Wakandan tribe.
Yeah, Winston Duke is the actor that plays he's awesome. As soon as that fight, I was like, if that fight started, I was like, okay, all right, this is, I'm sensing a screen presence here that you don't get very often. And then when he comes back, I was like, this guy is a movie star. Like, I want this guy to lead, like, an original action franchise where he just, like, carries guns and, like, punches people. Like, he's just got this charisma that it's like.
Yep.
All right.
The Jabari. That's who they are, by the way. And just, like, I don't want to go down a whole other tangent, but the Jabari and the Dora Milaje, the female guard, those are both really, really cool character ideas in the comics that are slightly problematic, and Ryan Coogler just sort of effortlessly cleans that part of it up, and just he remakes it into something that totally works in the world of this movie with very, very minor changes, and keeps what's cool about them from the comics. I just thought those were two additions that the way those ideas were handled. Just seeing what sort of originated them and seeing what Ryan Coogler made them into, it was really, really well handled, I thought. And then just last thing to throw in there, I mean, to me, I think that the way that this movie wraps up and the way that it's the final act of it. If somebody came to me and complained about that it was a little too conventional to have a big open battlefield fight a la Lord of the Rings, I guess I could kind of understand that. And that was that was my immediate reaction when it started going that direction. But it takes so many weird turns in the course of that scene that is definitely not something you would see in a Braveheart ripoff, basically. It would be hard for me I really think that I'm going to enjoy it even more the second time I watch the last act of this movie.
If anybody brought that to me, I'd say armored rhinos, go away. Yeah. Like I don't have time for you. Like what are you talking about?
Yeah. And suddenly like characters that have been kind of not really part of the action in the direct way are showing up wearing power gloves that shoot, you know, lasers out of them. I mean, it just goes. So, even though all superhero movies have to end with a big climactic fight, to me, there's a lot of stuff going on in that last battle sequence that you could.
Yeah, I don't think all of them have to end with a cool, like, you know, Lord of the Rings, Rohan versus Warg kind of like that I think that was a unique way to end a Marvel movie. I think that the Black Panther versus Killmonger fight is a little bit more conventional. But yeah, it was actually a breath of fresh air for me.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it again. I definitely will try to catch it again before Infinity War. Hopefully I can just make it seamless and as I start to rewatch all of the Marvel movies from Iron Man forward, then I can just slip in Black Panther at the end of the run, and then eventually my wife and children will see my face again.
Well, it's good that you're finally making time for some of these Marvel movies. You watch so many other things that, you know,
yeah.
it's good that you're, you know, kind of mixing it up a little bit.
Yeah. Sorry, Oscar contenders.
You're going to have
to take a back seat.
We're done. All right, man. Well, yeah, I'm glad you liked it, and looking forward to not talking to you again until we have another Marvel movie to discuss.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.